home economics major type of son, and his name is Jacob. Now, the boys were built very differently. They looked differently, and most importantly, they thought differently. And it is that difference in their thinking and in their mindset that we're going to focus on tonight. So let's read Genesis 25, starting at verse 27. We'll walk through this passage, this famous story of Esau and Jacob. Verse 27 says, "As the boys grew up, Esau became a skillful hunter." Remember, we said he's the outdoorsy. "A man of the open fields, while Jacob was the kind of person who liked to stay at home. Isaac loved Esau in particular because of the wild game he brought him. But Rebekah, their mother, favored Jacob. Well, one day, Jacob was cooking some stew. Now, Esau arrived home exhausted and hungry from a hunt. Esau said to Jacob, 'I'm starved. Please give me some of that red stew you've made.' And Jacob replied, 'All right, but trade me your birthright for it.'" You see, Esau was the older. Even though they were twins, one was born first, and Esau was the older. So he was the one with the birthright that we're going to be talking about. And this is what Jacob wanted from Esau. "All right, but trade me your birthright for it," Jacob says. Verse 32 says, "Look, I'm dying of starvation," said Esau. "So what good is my birthright to me now?" So Jacob insisted, "Well then, swear to me right now that it is mine." So Esau swore an oath, thereby selling all his rights as the firstborn to his younger brother Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and lentil stew. Esau ate and drank and went about his business, indifferent to the fact that he had given up his birthright. Now, when I prepare and Mr. McCray prepares and Mr. Robert prepare for our messages, we do all kinds of research. We read all kinds of books. We look at all kinds of manuscripts to see what we can learn about the passage. And it was interesting because Mr. McCray helped me out with this, and he sent me something he had found. He believes that he has found an ancient manuscript of what we have just read. Now, I looked at it, and I thought it was questionable, but I want to get your opinion on it. So to help us kind of get our hands around what we just already read, I've asked Mr. McCray, who also runs our drama team, I asked him to see if he could take that old dust blown off manuscript and have the taters, who are our drama people, kind of put this on for us so we can see some of the exact verbiage that was used in that particular scene. Would you like to see that? Yeah, I would like to see it too. All right, let's that's what we're going to do. We're going to see this. And, you know, I don't know how, you know, genuine it is, and maybe you can help me with it, okay? So we'll take a look. Lori, shut that down. That's good. All right. So Jacob purchases the claim, really. He purchases the entitlement for the birthright. But in this next section, we're going to read where Jacob actually gets it, where the father actually bequeaths the birthright to Jacob. This is in Genesis 27, starting at verse 1. "Now, when Isaac was old," this is the father, when Isaac was old and almost blind, "he called for Esau, his older son. 'I am old now,' Isaac said, 'and I expect every day to be my last. Take your bow and your quiver full of arrows and out into the open country and hunt some wild game. Hunt some wild game for me. Prepare it just the way I like it, so it's savory and good, and bring it here for me to eat. Then I will pronounce the blessing that belongs to you, my firstborn son, before I die." Okay, now let me jump in here. Isaac has just told Jacob, Esau, to go prepare some stew. When he comes back and gives his father the stew, then he is going to give him the birthright, pronounce the birthright over him. Apparently, stew was quite the thing to have back then because it's popping up in this passage over and over. What happens is when Isaac said this to Esau, the mother was listening. Rebekah hears what is said by Isaac, and the conversation makes her devise a plan for Jacob to now get the blessing. Even though he had stolen the right to it, the entitlement to it, now he's got to actually get it. And the mother's in cahoots with him on this. She says, I'll get you the blessing. So she cooks this stew up that Isaac has asked for, and while she does that, Jacob goes and dresses in some hairy skins, puts hairy skins on him so to simulate the body hair of Esau. He was a real hunk, ladies. This is what you're looking for here. All right? Thick hair like a bear. All right? Guess what? This trick actually works because Isaac is so blind because he's over 40. And once you're over 40, that's it. Your eyes start to go, right? Yeah, you know. Okay, so he's probably 41, maybe 141. And now, here's the blessing. Ready? This is what he wanted. This is what Jacob wanted and what Isaac's going to give him. So he kneels down before his father. He's got the hairy skins on. Meanwhile, his brother's out there trying to catch something. And Isaac says this to him. May God always give you plenty of dew for healthy crops and good harvests of grain and wine. May many nations become your servants. May you be the master of your brothers. May all your mother's sons bow low before you. All who curse you are cursed, and all who bless you are blessed. And so, with that, Jacob hightails it out of there. He steals the blessing. He steals the birthright, and he gets out of Dodge quick. Esau comes back into his father's tent, and he learns that he has been robbed of the birthright. Even though he had given it up years ago, some people never want to own what they've done. And Esau is one of those. And so, a feud is born. Two brothers, not the Hatfields and the McCoys. This is the Isaacs number one and the Isaacs number two. Two twin boys will be at war with each other, at least it appears. They were on a run from one another. Jacob was on a run from Esau. You and I are left thousands of years later to come to this famous story and say, what are we to learn from it, Lord? What am I to glean from this story of Jacob stealing the birthright from Esau? Well, let's dive right in. What we see here are two people with two different visions, two people with two widely divergent perspectives. One sees with a crippling short-sightedness, while the other views life with tremendous foresight, a far-sightedness that would allow him to become a pivotal player, and he will become a pivotal player in God's grand scheme. Tonight, we will focus our attention on what each of these players sees, what each of these men view as important and as essential. First, we're going to look at Esau, the one who had the birthright stolen. In the first story God records for us, we see Esau selling his birthright to Jacob for a bowl of stew. Now, the birthright, this makes the owner, the one who has the birthright, this makes him the king, basically, the leader, the one responsible for the entire family. And therefore, it makes him the pivotal central member in the family. And he is the one that God will deal with in a big way when you have the birthright at this time in history. We probably can best understand this birthright idea comparing it to the British royal family. We all know that Prince Charles, whether you like him or not, he will be the next king of England. Why? Because he has the birthright. He, just like Esau, is the firstborn. Meanwhile, Prince Andrew, the secondborn, he will be a much, much lower servant in the kingdom. He won't be the king. So, basically, the secondborn will be very little, and if anything should happen to Prince Charles, who would then be King Charles, if anything happens to him, it still doesn't go to the younger brother. Who does it go to? His son. Do we have one of them? Yeah, Prince, was it William? Is he the older one? Yeah, I think so, Prince William. He stands in line with his birthright. Well, it isn't much different here for Esau and Jacob. Esau, because of his birthright, would be the one who would inherit the lion's share of his father's wealth. And even more importantly, at this time in Israel's history, God would heavily invest himself in the owner of the birthright. This is how God did it in this dispensation. But we discover in this story that Esau tends to see only in the here and now. He has no thought for what is coming. He has no care for what might be in the future. Esau is short-sighted. And I have found, as I have been in ministry, that short-sightedness is a common condition that we can get plagued with. When I was first doing ministry out here in Warren County, I developed a good friendship with a friend named Pastor Scott. And Pastor Scott invited me to go to the juvenile correction facility with him on Sunday mornings. And we would do a service there for the kids in the juvenile detention facility. And after a while, he would ask me to participate in a bigger way. And eventually, I took over. And the kids were always very interested in the fact that I was a fireman. The pastor thing didn't really interest them. But the fire department thing, that floated their boat. They wanted to hear the fireman. They wanted all stories. So, as part of the day, I would tell them some of the stories, and they would ooh and ah, and I would tell them about how we had fought the fiery beast inside of a building and how it went, and they were just floored by this whole thing. The thing in their mind, though, was that this job that they thought was incredible, this incredible opportunity to be a firefighter, they felt that that job was out of their reach, and they told me so. Why? Because right now, when we were standing in that juvenile correction facility, they had charges facing them, criminal charges. And because they didn't feel that they were smart enough or qualified enough or even lucky enough, and because in their short-sightedness they saw only their problem at hand, they couldn't look forward into the future at what could someday be. One of my last visits there, I had a very sad visit to the jail. I sat down afterwards and I met with a returning inmate. And this is tough when you're a returning inmate. This is one who was in, got out, you know, and that's a mate, get out, and then come back. It was a kid that I had spoke to months before I had sat with the same kid, and only just to see him return. I talked to him and I saw that he had an incredible inability to see past the home life he was in. He couldn't see past the neighborhood that he was in, and he couldn't see past that lifestyle. He only saw the here and now, and it was causing him to lose out on what one day could be, just like Esau. I knew that this kid and every other kid there could be something someday, but they couldn't see it. They're looking with Esau eyes, short-sighted eyes. They're looking at today. They're looking at the here and now. They're looking at what the circumstances are at the moment. And to them, there was no concept of possibility. That was an odd thing to them. So I made a deal with them. Every time I saw them, I told them, every single one of you guys is invited to come to Westbridge. I can't tell you how many times I told them that I wanted them to come and visit me at Westbridge on Saturday night. I even offered to pick them up when they got out. I'll pick you up and bring you. But as they got out, no one ever showed up. And so I made a new deal with them. I said, here's the new deal. When you get out, you call me. Here's my number. I will pick you up, and I will take you out to dinner. Then we'll go to Westbridge. And when we're there, we can talk about this short-sightedness of yours. We can get you to see something different. I'm still waiting. I never got a phone call. That was years ago. And as I thought about this concept this week, I realized it's not just those misguided kids who can be short-sighted. It's not just teenagers. Each of us can be short-sighted as well. Beethoven's music teacher said to him, "As a composer, you are hopeless." Beethoven. When Thomas Edison was a young boy, his teacher said he was so stupid. That's the word he used. "You're so stupid, you cannot learn anything." Thomas Edison. When F.W. Woolworth, some of you people over 40 know who that is. Okay? This is the guy who started departments. He was the first Walmart guy, all right? Woolworth, at 21, he got a job in a store, but he was not allowed to wait on customers because he didn't have enough good sense. Here's another one you may recognize, Walt Disney. Walt Disney was once fired by a newspaper editor because he was thought to have no good ideas. World famous tenor Enrico Caruso was told by one music teacher, "You can't sing. You have no voice at all." And lastly, Louisa May Alcott, author of Little Women, was told by an editor that she was incapable of writing anything that would have any popular appeal. Each of these instructors, each of these supervisors, suffered from short-sightedness. They could not see the potential that the future held, just like Esau. Esau let one moment's hunger cost him a grand future. Now, skip ahead on your outline to the last part. The question we need to ask ourselves is this: is there anywhere we are being short-sighted? Is there anything you're being short-sighted about? Is there a dream that you have given up on? Maybe you feel like my friends at the juvenile center. Maybe you've been told you're too old to learn any new tricks. You're too dumb to wear a white collar. You're too plain to be anything special. Or your sin, that's bigger than anyone else's, and that disqualifies you from anything. Or what you are today is about the best you can ever hope to be. That's short-sighted thinking. That's Esau thinking, and it cost him an eternal legacy. Now, as you go home and you ponder those questions this week and you think about that, let's move forward and look at Jacob's vision. Jacob, on the other hand, the one who stole the birthright, he had no idea what the future would hold in God's plan. He had no idea. He didn't know where it was going. He didn't know what it meant. Jacob has to immediately run and leave the only family he's ever known. He has to leave his home and wander in a land he has never been to before. But Jacob does all this with one thing in his pocket. He's got that blessing now. He's got God's blessing on his life. And that's not even something tangible, is it? You can't hold that. It wasn't a lucky charm. All he had was the promise of the blessing that was put on him. But to Jacob, that was everything. Because in Jacob's long-term vision, he knew that with God, I have the key to unlimited possibility. Jacob knows that if anything significant was going to happen in the future, that something significant was going to happen with God driving. He knew these significant things would happen on God's team, and Jacob made sure he guaranteed himself a starting position on that team with that birthright. As he wandered that desert, running from his home, I wonder how he felt. I know I would have felt. I always pictured Jacob fleeing the scene with a kind of excited euphoria, the kind of feeling that maybe a bank robber gets as they flee speeding away from a successful bank heist. I wonder if Jacob laid under the stars at night. And I wonder if he laid there with his far-sighted vision, rolling over countless possibilities of what his life with God's blessing could possibly bring. What will God do with me now that I've been blessed by him and he will be mine? Could it be that someday God may even part a sea and let people walk through it on dry land? It's possible. Would it be possible with God now for flaming chariots to come down from heaven and pick up passengers and take them to heaven? With God's blessing on his life, would it be possible for Jacob's family, Jacob's descendants, could they possibly be important in history after his name is changed from Jacob to Israel? You see, with God, all things are possible, and Jacob had God. And all those possibilities that we talked about, parting a sea, flaming chariots, picking up people for heaven, God blessing Jacob's life so that Israel becomes important in history, they all came about. They all happened. Oh yeah, Jacob had stolen. He had stolen the blessing, but the bottom line that God honored was that Jacob wanted it and that he would fight for it. And now as he lay under those stars, Jacob knew anything is possible. Anything. You see, that's being far-sighted. That's long-range vision. But for a lot of us, it's not always the vision that comes into our focus first. Now, a lot of you know I love motorcycles, and I've loved them since I was a little boy and put my father's retired motorcycle helmet on my dresser at 8 and stared at that helmet until I was 17, until I actually drove a motorcycle with that helmet and dreamed about it. And I have motorcycles, and then I have children. And one day at the firehouse, one of the men, Timmy Schmigelski, showed up with a little JR50 Suzuki he was selling. Said, "I'm getting rid of this motorcycle. My kids are done with it. It's a little learner's bike." I thought, wow. Gave him the money, brought that little motorcycle home. Katie and Cody were big enough to ride and taught them to ride motorcycle too. And Katie turned out to be a great motorcycle rider, but Cody kind of caught on with that little JR50 the most. Katie outgrew it pretty quick. But Cody loved running that little JR50. But he liked to ride it in pretty much the same spot, right in the front yard, right around the same couple of trees. Get a nice little path. And after a while, I started to notice something standing in my driveway. Uh-oh, look at that. The grass is shot. The grass has a big rut. Grass is gone on this one tire trail. Cody must be riding in the same spot. And look, now the grass is all gone, and he's down in the dirt, and half of that's flying around. I said, "Hey, Cody, what are you doing? You're riding the motorcycle." Wait a minute. I tried to think about it. He loves riding that little thing. And I love motorcycles. Now my short-sighted vision is looking at, my front lawn. The neighbors might want to throw me out, but... they'll throw me out for all the people parking in front of my house on Wednesday night before they throw me out for that. That looked pretty bad. I started some long-range thinking. What if Cody kept riding these motorcycles? What if one day he grows up and he and I can tour the country on motorcycles? That'd be cool. What about some far-sighted vision of Cody going in the church that he's attending at the time and getting a bunch of guys excited about going on a motorcycle ride, and he takes them on motorcycle trips once a year? What if Cody does that and tells his men about Jesus Christ, and they go on these motorcycle trips to all these cool places like Skyline Drive in Vermont and Niagara Falls? Wouldn't that be cool? Long-range vision says those are possibilities. And long-range vision caused me to say, you know what? It's going to cost me about $10 a grass seed thrown down in the spring, and that tire rut would be gone. Go ahead, Coach. Tear it up. Have a good time. I started to ask myself a lot of questions like that about long-term vision. Things like, 10 years from now, that's a good way to ask yourself these questions. 10 years from now, how important will this issue that's on my mind, how important will this issue be 10 years from now? 10 years from now, how important will that grass be on my front yard back in 2000, whatever? 10 years from now, of what significance will some minor juvenile criminal charges be 10 years from now? And 10 years from now, of what remembrance will a sin be to God that you repented of 10 years ago? The big takeaway we need to get from this famous story is that God asks you and me to be farsighted. He asks you and me to be the ones who await the amazing ideas of a Walt Disney when maybe he doesn't have such wonderful ideas at the moment. God asks you and me to be the ones who are encouraging to the not quite yet polished Louisa May Alcotts. God asks you and me to be the ones who hear the potential symphony in the fledgling Beethovens and to see the potential, he has placed, that God has placed in every single errant sinner that he brings along our paths that wants to change and become like God. That's long-term vision. And perhaps the most amazing thing is that God asks us to have long-term vision when it comes to looking at ourselves. We don't need to steal the birthright from our older brother. God offers himself to each and every one of us. Jesus gave us his birthright. He makes us fellow heirs with him. The Bible tells us so. So like Jacob, maybe we need to lay in bed at night, staring at the stars, thinking of possibility, because you have God on your team. Maybe we need to say, Lord, what will this life be like 10 years from now when this recession is long gone? How will I have acted, and where do you want me now? Lord, how is it that 10 years from now, you want me to do something amazing? How do I get ready for that? What do you want me to do? And he'll show you the steps. We have God, and we can be farsighted. And we are to leave a mark on others. Others who feel maybe they're not worth anything. Others who believe they're not qualified to get any decent job, and show them the possibility. But the possibility comes from being connected on God's team. Maybe you're here tonight and you've never connected with God. Maybe you've known about him, but you never have secured that birthright. Maybe you've never said, I want to make that mine. You can do that tonight. I'll give you the opportunity as we pray. Close your eyes and just let me walk through a simple prayer. Lord, if there's someone here tonight who hasn't connected with you, who hasn't become one of your children, who hasn't said, I do want to be a child of God. I want my sins forgiven. I want everything I've done that's wrong taken away. And I know that Jesus Christ made that possible. His death on the cross makes it possible for God to wipe away our sins and give us a fresh slate and give us a Holy Spirit in our hearts to guide us. All you have to do in your heart is say, Lord, I want that. I admit my mistakes. Help me to not do them anymore. Wash me clean. Become my Lord. Become my leader. And then take me on the adventure that you have for my life. And help me know that 10 years from now, life will be much different than it is today. And you've said, it'll be life to the full. We leave ourselves in your hands. Amen. I want to thank you for being with us tonight. Next week we will have our here fairly early.